Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The prize winning ESPN series 30 for 30 explores the impact of instant replay on tennis in Subject to Review. This episode gets a rare Sunday showcase this weekend, and filmmaker Theo Anthony joins me next. Time to review what made 2019 TV memorable, and we'll do that next half hour with one of our favorite observers of television any year, Prairie Insider and Overseer Mark Bremen. And BYU TV's contribution to original holiday movies this season is Christmas Jars, which will get a special presentation Christmas Eve. At the top of the next hour, we'll learn more from executive producers Jonas and Desi Poupras. Also ahead, Disney Plus's January Diary, a Game of Thrones co-star's new game, Hallmark Channel versus an ad call, and our new classic trivia question and prize. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Appleman. I'm simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a trio of great audiobooks this holiday season when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 35 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and welcome to a 90-minute edition of the program All About Television. A very good Monday afternoon to you and all. Wonderful guests coming your way throughout the program, and we invite you, as always, to be interactive with us. All you have to do is pick up the phone and dial this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And we have our chat room in business for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or Spreaker screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Theo Anthony from 30 for 30 will join us live here in the Big Apple after these news notes. NBC Universal announced this morning that Chief Executive Officer Steve Burke will exit next year, and that Jeff Shell will assume that role. Various entertainment news outlets, this one included, reported this development last Friday. What was not in view then and is now, Shell will become CEO next month, with Burke staying on until after the Summer Olympics as NBC Universal's chairperson. In a statement, Burke noted that he's looking forward to, and we quote, the next chapter of my life where I can pursue a different set of interests, unquote. More from Mark Bremen in our next half hour. Disney Plus set to premiere Diary of a Future President January 17th. Adapted from the childhood of creator Ilana Pena, Diary explores a 12-year-old's ambition to become a future U.S. leader. Jane the Virgin star Gino Rodriguez will co-executive produce the series and direct the opening episode. Gold Rose Productions will launch with a miniseries on Academy Award-winning star Vivian Leigh of Gone with the Wind and the Streetcar Named Desire fame. Dura, Big Rose's leader, is Game of Thrones co-star Natalie Derner, and Fremantle will join forces with Mad Dog to get his TV projects into viewers' homes. About FaceTime and Hallmark Channel, the network apologized to online wedding planner AC Zola for temporarily canceling a commercial including a same-sex wedding. The commercial was called before the weekend and will be back for play later this week. Some quickies now before we get to our first guest. HBO Max will bring 12 dates of Christmas to its lineup of 2020 holiday season originals. Star Trek Picard has been cleared to be part of CBS All Access through 2021. You can thank a renewal call ahead of Picard's premiere late January 2020. And Time Magazine's 2019 Person of the Year, Greta Thunberg, will be the subject of a Hulu special next year. And that is news notes for today. When it comes to outstanding sports television, no one single program has been awarded probably more in terms of high critical acclaim, solid viewership, and awards than ESPN's 30 for 30. It's been around for 11 years now in various time periods. More than 100 episodes, it's won Emmys, Sports Emmys, Peabody Awards, you name it. The latest installment comes your way this Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's called Subject to Review, and it deals with how one technique of television that was actually started in the late 1960s for football has now become a very important part of tennis. Joining us live to talk about the program is its filmmaker, Theo Anthony, who joins me here in New York. Theo, welcome in.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Theo, how did you get involved in this idea of showcasing instant replay and its impact on tennis?
I think the project honestly just started as a much broader look at the history of instant replay. I was really interested how the introduction of this new video technology changed the way that we engaged with sports, and specifically like how you really had to teach people to see in a new way. You know, when as you were saying, like some of the first examples of instant replay were in the early 60s, and you know, announcers at the time literally had to tell television viewers that the team hadn't scored again, that they were seeing this brand new thing called instant replay that was just what had happened in the past was happening again. So yeah, these are it's like a new word that you have to teach people, and I'm really interested in how that evolves over time. And as the project went on, we decided that it was best just to really focus in on one very specific example, and the use of Hawkeye in tennis provides a really, really interesting example.
I believe the father of instant replay was Tony Verna, the great late CBS director of the National Football League telecast. He actually, I believe, invented it for the Army-Navy game, which, by the way, the game latest version was this past weekend. And then he transferred it when he was doing NFL football on a full-time basis for CBS. And it was from there that it then was put into play in other sports.
Yep.
So how did it make its way into tennis? How long ago?
Well, it kind of had a sort of roundabout way into tennis. You know, there's been obviously, like, when we're talking about instant replay, it's like literally just replaying a video that's, you know, been around probably since like the 70s or 80s. I'm not totally sure. But when you're talking about like the specific system of Hawkeye, which is, you know, anytime you're watching a tennis match and you see a 3D reconstruction of where the ball is, that technology has been around since like the early 2000s. It was first introduced into broadcast in 2004. And you ended up with this really interesting situation, which is that sometimes what Hawkeye showed contradicted what the umpires and the line judges said. And that set up a really interesting conflict. Finally, that was in 2007, the tennis governing board allowed the use of Hawkeye to sort of overrule a judge's decision, and that kind of is the birth of the modern era that we see today with sort of Hawkeye and human judges working in sync.
What makes Hawkeye different from other instant replay systems that were either created by the likes of a television network like CBS or NBC or ABC Sports, or by somebody independent?
Yeah, so it's really, you know, every sport has its own quirks and how they go and how they handle decisions on the field. What's interesting about Hawkeye is, so Hawkeye essentially is 10 cameras set up around the court. They all record the court with at a high frame rate. And basically by taking 10 different images of the ball, you can like triangulate the ball's position to a very high degree of accuracy. And then that data is taken to determine whether a ball is in or out. It's also visualized for broadcast in a way to, you know, to show audiences where the ball is. But what's really unique about Hawkeye in tennis is that this data actually makes an automatic decision. And like, so a line judge makes a call, and a player has an opportunity to challenge that call if they disagree with it. And then at which point it goes to Hawkeye. It's almost like appealing a decision in a lower court. The decision gets, you know, passed up the Court of Appeals to a higher court, and Hawkeye actually makes the final ruling on the call, and it can't be challenged or overturned. So this automated system actually has the final say over a human line call, and that's what makes it really unique to tennis.
Sunday to Review is the 30 for 30 episode we are talking about, and it comes your way this Sunday afternoon, 3:30 Pacific time on ESPN. And we've got the filmmaker behind this particular episode, Theo Anthony, with us live from New York here on Tomorrow Be Televised this half hour. And if you want to have a question or a comment happen with him, lob it in at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04. We have one person in the room already, so get into the room or phone us in, and we'll get you aboard ASAP. Happy to have you with us in the program All About Television. We have a big two-hour edition coming your way on Friday. A lot of it's going to deal with the future of television, kicking off with our lead guest, Eli Sternberg. He's the chief executive officer of Hovercast. He was featured on the closing session of the TV of Tomorrow show earlier this month here in New York, and we'll have him live. And then we will have the developer behind the first ever winner of the Apple TV App of the Year Award. The app is called The Explorers, and developer Jean-Francois Gon will be joining us live from Europe. And then we'll look at, or listen to, the chief executive officer of a company called Future Today that's trying to get new programming services available to you on smart TV sets and smart devices. His latest project, which launched last week, the Lego Channel. And finally, we'll take a check out on the brand new Fox series, Flirty Dancing with Jenna Dewan. You've heard of Dirty Dancing? Well, how about Flirty Dancing, where couples get together in part by choreographing their own routine for each other? We will speak with Mike Yorkshire, the executive producer working with Jenna Dewan. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here live on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. A lot of times when a documentary deals with something technological and its impact on society, the filmmakers usually try to focus, or video makers try to focus on a particular incident and the impact. And was that the case with Subject to Review?
Well, there's a lot of different incidents. I try to, like, really pinpoint different moments in history that kind of show, that really kind of crystallize, like, a lot of, like, the state of the conversation. And, you know, by looking at something in 2004 and looking at something in 2019, you kind of see how far the conversation has changed. My strategy is I'm really process-based. I love, like, really knowing how things work. And I love, like, those tutorial videos on YouTube that, like, you know, show, you know, how to, like, how to build a watch or something, or, like, how to, like, these very, like, granular videos that show you how things are made. So I really take, like, a very procedural approach to these things while also zeroing in on some specific moments in the film. The film sort of starts with a story of, like, a very infamous Serena Williams and Jennifer Capriati match in 2004, where Hawkeye was being used in broadcasts, but it didn't have any authority over the call on the field yet. And there was, like, a four or five very blatant missed calls against Serena Williams, and it ended up costing her the match. And that incident really catalyzed a huge campaign to bring Hawkeye into the sport. It's a really clear example of, like, why this thing can be really good. And there's some other examples that, you know, from later on that kind of show a more complicated picture of, you know, have we gone too far?
We have another person just joined our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. If you have a question or comment for Theo, put it in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. What group of people were easier to get on camera to talk about the instant replay in tennis? The tennis players or the judges, the line judges, the judges in the sport, judges and referees?
Well, yeah, so I don't do very many interviews in my films. I'm just kind of sitting there alongside the Hawkeye technicians, actually, for the majority of the film. We don't interview any line judges or any players. We're just almost like in the press pit, just filming, and our entire focus is on the Hawkeye crew. So I can't really answer the question of who would be more difficult because we didn't really go that route.
That's an interesting route to take. Why did you decide to take that route?
I mean, honestly, because, like, I mean, I feel like the players get so much FaceTime already, you know, like, there's a lot of people who might do a better job than we can already. And honestly, our focus is not even, it's not really even about the tennis for us. It's really more about this very specific system and how it's used. And I think, you know, the way that you're taught to watch tennis is, you know, to focus on the players. And I think, you know, what other stories can we tell when we kind of, you know, look to the sidelines and, you know, notice other things to see?
But when you talk to the technicians, the people who put the system together, for them, what was the toughest part about coming up with a system that everyone would think would be reliable to make these calls or to show where the ball is going?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, I mean, it's really interesting to hear them talk about it. I mean, they're just really professional technicians who know the ins and outs of this system so well. They have a very difficult task of, you know, it's almost like if we kind of continue the metaphor of a court of law, right? You know, there's a dispute and there's two sides, the players, you know, one says I'm right, the other says I'm right. Hawkeye almost has to play the role of both judge and prosecutor, like where they are ultimately like reviewing the case, but they're also like presenting the evidence in such a way that you like trust their authority. So I think the maybe the most difficult thing, you know, from a Hawkeye, you know, the company perspective is like really maintaining that authoritative role. And, you know, you want to really believe, you want people to believe in you, and you have to maintain that public trust. In terms of the technicians, they're just like, I mean, they're just incredible. I mean, they watch, like, I think they're on the road 200 days a year or something, and just watching so much tennis. And I think they're just like automatic. It was incredible to see them work.
In other sports, the use of instant replay has become so prevalent. There's always a replay after every in football, both pro, college and pro. Baseball is almost like a replay of some kind after every play. But it's now come to the point where you have the coaches come up with challenges that if they see something that's really consequential, which has dire consequences for their sport. The call should be overturned. They will ask for a challenge. They'll throw a red flag out, and if the challenge wins, you're great. If not, you lose a timeout or something like that. When the Hawkeye people developed this technology, were there any concerns about the fact that the coach of the players would, let's say, call for a challenge or something like that, which is now prevalent in other sports, would happen in tennis?
Yeah, no, there always is that, you know, that there is that risk that it's more of like a psychological challenge just to break someone's flow. You see that in football, you see that in a lot of other places. In tennis, the way it works is each player gets two challenges per set. If they disagree with the judge, they can challenge. And if they're right and Hawkeye proves the judge wrong and the player was right to challenge, they don't get a challenge taken away. But if they challenge a judge just to disrupt the play and it's very obviously the correct call, they're penalized and, you know, they lose one of their challenges. So it's not, you know, you occasionally see players do it, but the system works so fast, you know, it's like we're talking about 15 seconds, that it's really not that big of an issue as of yet. I mean, you definitely see it in other sports, you know, where it's used in soccer, professional soccer. There's a lot of controversy right now over the use of instant replay and the VAR, like really causing a lot of disruptions and delays to games. So I think it's a much bigger issue in those sports right now.
And with that also, that you bring up another issue, which is flow, which is that, you know, the game has to stop to check the replay out, whether it's soccer, whether it's a coach's challenge. And now also you have a situation where in college pro football, I believe everything is reviewable in the last 2 minutes, or every touchdown, for example, there's a review no matter whether or not how the play is scored by a run play or a pass play. Did flow come up with an issue, you know, in terms of stopping the game and, you know, extending a game beyond where it normally goes?
Yeah, I think that's always the trade-off, and I think the film tries to address some of that is, you know, if you wanted to be the most accurate you could, you know, you'd just challenge every single play, right? You know, like just to make sure you got it right. But, like, what are you losing, right? You're losing that sense of flow. You're going to start losing viewers. It's going to start to be entertaining. Like, if it has this really stuttering, you know, pace to the game. So I think there's always this conversation, and there's no formula to it about, like, you know, at what point are we willing to just kind of like let it go and move on? And, you know, and obviously, you know, it differs from sport to sport, but I think that's always just a question that we need to be having of what are we potentially losing in our pursuit of perfection in one arena or under certain parameters. You know, could we be hurting other aspects of the sport, maybe the drama or the tension? If we take away all the line judges, you know, what are we left with? Just, you know, a couple people playing pong, you know, on a court.
You're hearing Theo Anthony. He is the filmmaker behind the latest installment of ESPN's award-winning series 30 for 30. It's called Subject to Review, about instant replay and how it's used now in tennis with the Hawkeye system. He joins us live from New York, and this episode will run on Sunday afternoon this weekend at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on ESPN. If you have a question or comment for our guest, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you're a new listener to the Pro Roll Back Television, we've got some great news for you this holiday season. All of our episodes are currently available for this year anywhere on our podcast version. So check us out on iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker podcast app, as well as our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and on the iHeartRadio podcast network. When you go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you're in. Again, all of our episodes from 2019 and from earlier years, they're all available for you to enjoy, you and your friends, this holiday season on podcast at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/tell. And some of our episodes now are available on Media Village, the media leadership website, which I write columns for on a regular basis. So check those out as well at MediaVillage.com. And while you're there, check out my good friend E.B. Moss's Insider Insights, terrific work on the world of television and media and where it's all going with E.B. Moss. It's Insider Insights, 50-plus podcast and growing at MediaVillage.com. Theo, you know, is this your first time working with the 30 for 30 team, and what was it like for you to work with them?
Yeah, it is my first time doing a 30 for 30. I've been a fan of the series for a long time. I think, you know, it's a really incredible platform to bring, you know, a whole, like, diverse array of, like, you know, approaches to nonfiction filmmaking to a really broad audience. And, you know, coming from like a background that isn't a really, like, straightforward documentary background, those opportunities can be really few and far between. And it's been really cool to just to have this film just be able to get out there to a really general audience.
In fact, this film has been actually shown in a number of film festivals, and you're also working with a company called Memory. Talk about both having the film festival circuit be a way to get your product out there pre-ESPN, but also talk about working with Memory and what they brought to this special.
Yeah, so just Memory are just my, you know, some of my closest friends and also collaborators. It's a two-person production company. They run by Riel Rockdechter and Sebastian Pardo. They're based in L.A. I've known them for like 4 years now. We worked together on my first film. I, you know, basically self-financed and shot and edited my first feature film, Rat Film. And I was at a point where I was looking ahead to release, and I had done some short films that had done the festival circuit, but I knew a feature film was a much bigger project. And we linked up, and they took the film, and we decided we just wanted to keep working together, and we also worked together on this film, and my next feature film, which will be due out sometime next year, we're also working on, and it's just a really great relationship. We have, you know, they get what I'm doing, they support what I'm doing, and yeah, they're just there's a lot of horror stories out there about, like, you know, producer director relationships, and I'm very fortunate to have found my people. Yeah, in terms of the film festivals, that's something that I'm most familiar with. The whole broadcast thing is and streaming is, like, very, very new to me. You know, film festivals are a great way if you're a new filmmaker to meet the people and, like, meet these gatekeepers and, you know, just get your work out there. And you don't get seen by as many people as you would just on a broadcast, but, like, you do get seen by people who have a lot of power in these communities. And that, you know, can be a really good thing for your work. So with this, it was nice to kind of, like, play it both ways and allow us to go the film festival route and, you know, get it to a lot of friends and programmers and critics to sort of help build the buzz that way. And it's really nice to have a guaranteed path of distribution through broadcast on ESPN. Can't really, like, ask for it. A better combination.
When Tony Verna and his CBS colleagues pioneered instant replay on their coverage of pro football and college football, you wonder if they could have foreseen the kind of future we have now, where you have everything from computer graphics, statue call-up all over the place, all sorts of instant replay, reverse angle, you know, all sorts of different ways to enhance a telecast of a sport. What does your documentary say about replay, about these kind of enhancements in terms of how they're being used in sports television? What lessons do you think we can learn, or the TV industry can learn, in terms of use of replay?
Yeah, I almost think, like, the film is a better answer to that question than anything I'd be able to stir up now. But I think if I were to take, like, a really general stab at it, I think it's really important. You know, you see an image, and I think a lot of us are brought up to think that image is a one-to-one representation of the world. You know, you take a picture of a sunset, and you're like, okay, this is the sunset. Like, I'm seeing the real thing. And I think it's really important to understand that, like, there's the world, and then there's an image of that world, and there's a lot of space in between, and there's a lot of, like, instruments, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of, like, politics in between the world and your image of the world. And I think that really applies with instant replay in terms of, you know, is this reality or is this just somebody's version of reality? And there's a lot of lessons, I know, that you can take from there. And I think, it's equally applicable to a lot of, you know, lessons in our governance and our judicial system and the way that we interact with, you know, algorithms and, you know, big data and in our everyday life. And, you know, there's the world that's being presented to us, and, you know, just not, don't take things at face value. There's a lot of things beneath the surface that are worth unpacking. And that's kind of maybe the space that, you know, I try to wriggle into.
Point of note, before one more question for Theo, if you're wondering, if you have YouTube, and many people have smart TV sets and smart devices can get YouTube as well as on your laptops and smartphones, you can now see some of the early coverage of college and pro football from the 1960s, whether it was on CBS or NBC or ABC. Check it out. It's very, very instructive to see how people watched and covered pro football way back when, in the decade where it really started to have prominence. When it was still the American Football League, the National Football League, and a Super Bowl was between teams of leagues rather than teams of conferences as it is now. Theo, new decade, new year coming up in 15 days from now. Where do you want to take your TV career?
I don't know. I mean, I think that television and, you know, presents a really amazing opportunity to take what I've already been doing with, you know, and want to keep doing with my interest to a much broader audience. I think that films that are often seen as like more experimental or difficult or, you know, don't have this mass appeal is actually kind of selling them short. And that a lot of these questions that, you know, this film and other films that I like, made by filmmakers I admire, they're really like presentable to much larger audiences. And, you know, I think that I'd love to continue to bring like challenging work to bigger audiences. And yeah, you know, through whatever medium that is, like whether it's, you know, TV, streaming, like they're all just really cool opportunities to get people talking and to, you know, hopefully like educate and learn, you know, from other people. So, yeah.
The latest installment of ESPN's prize-winning 30 for 30 comes your way this Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on ESPN. It's called Subject to Review. I think you will find it quite fascinating, especially if you're a fan of TV technology and how it has evolved over these decades. Again, it's called Subject to Review this coming Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific on ESPN's award-winning series, 30 for 30. Check your locals where ESPN is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to ESPN.com or ESPN.go.com. Theo Ramsey, the filmmaker of this installment, thank you again for joining us. Happy holiday season to you and your crew, and all the very best for a wonderful year and decade ahead.
Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, Theo. Take care. All the greatest.
Yep, you too. Bye.
Theo Anthony from ESPN 30 for 30 joining me here in New York. More tomorrow, televised coming later. First awards from the fine folks at Audible.com, our sponsor. And if you're looking for a very inspiring story to hear in this holiday season and beyond, how about a wonderful tale called Educated by Tara Westrum? I'm not going to say a lot about it, but I promise you this, it's very inspiring. And you can get Educated right now as one of the three free audiobooks you can enjoy for a one-month trial right now through Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and certainly inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen up on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and IR Radio. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised, and you get not one, not two, but three audiobooks to enjoy this holiday season and beyond, and a one-month trial. Plus, you get great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And if you're looking still for a wonderful holiday gift that lasts a lifetime, nothing like the imagination of audio, the imagination of sound, and transforming the way you hear the world, for sure. So check it out, audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up in our next half hour, we will have our new Classic Trivia Question of the Week. We're going for our third weekly winner in a row. And if you have the correct answer, you can win the wonderful book, Identify Yourself, by one of our guests earlier this year, the creator of Night Flight on USA Network and the Night Flight Channel on smart TV sets and smart devices, Stuart Shapiro. But first, what kind of a year in television was 2019 like? We'll find out and also get thoughts about this new changing of the guard at Comcast NBC Universal from our next guest, Mr. Prodding Insider himself, Mark Brimmon. Joins me here at the Big Apple after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is Best Internet Radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio and Spreaker.com. together reaching over 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is bringing you home for Daytime After Dark. Check it out tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Daytime After Dark, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget that the BTR and Spreaker is available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com, available also on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We're back tomorrow from Bobby Tomei on this Monday, December 16th, 2019. Simon Appleby will be live from New Web, New York. More great guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and we want you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Pick up the phone, use this number, and dial in 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our next half hour, we've got our classic trivia question of the week, brand new question going for our third weekly winner in a row. But first, let's find out what kind of a year 2019 in television was like and where 2020 may be headed. And when it comes to people who observe where that can go, no better one I know of than our next guest. He's been with us before, Mr. Promi Insider himself, Mark Bergman. Mark, happy holiday season to you and your family.
Hey, Simon, how are you? Happy holidays.
Very, very fine, thank you. Before we get into thinking about 2019 and 2020, your thoughts about the changing of the guard in NBC Universal with Steve Burke exiting the scene and Jeff Shell coming in next month as CEO.
Yes, that was a very big announcement today. It's not a surprise. There was, you know, that was rumored. That was, you know, there was talk that he was going to be leaving. But, yeah, it's definitely official. He is left NBC, and Jeff Shell will be stepping in for him. And I think the biggest problem, the biggest obstacle he's going to face is, you know, there's issues within NBC News that he's going to have to deal with.
The whole thing with Me Too and what's been going on with Matt Lauer and et cetera, with that department.
Well, you know, Matt Lauer was really one of the first individuals that was taken to task in the Me Too movement. I mean, that was already over a year ago, and that really hurt NBC's credibility. And, you know, that really did that certainly, you know, people still remember them. They always will. And that's one of the things, you know, he has to deal with. But it's a year later, or over a year later. And, you know, things seem to have, you know, improved over there. And that's something he's going to have to keep an eye on.
CNBC had a segment in Power Lunch over the last hour about this transition. And Andrew Roar Sorkin, who's also on Squawk Box, one of the co-hosts there, suggested that one of the things that Steve Burke did that was critical was that he made the deal to get at Comcast, to get NBC Universal, and then from there really work on NBC, moving up from fourth place where it was among broadcast networks to the first, where it's been held pretty steady for the last few years.
Well, you know, right now NBC in primetime is looking, you know, they're having a decent season. They're having a season, you know, that's comparable to last year. But you have to always remember that in fourth quarter, what's carrying NBC specifically is Sunday Night Football. You know, the one thing about this season that I think people are going to remember is, you know, there's a lot of erosion going on. We're in an era of peak TV and, you know, outlets are losing audience. But the one thing that really is not affected is live sports. People are still tuning in droves to watch it. And that's a big benefit to NBC in fourth quarter. However, they do have a lot of other blocks that are working. They still have, you know, The Voice, which is on two nights of the week. This Is Us is still a top-rated drama in adults 18 to 49. The Chicago franchise on Wednesday is rock solid. So NBC has a lot going for itself in primetime. So they're having a decent season, and he's walking into, you know, an improved landscape for them in primetime. Jeff Shell.
Yeah. And not only that, he's also working into the situation with the Olympics where, thanks to Burke and Comcast, NBC Universal has the exclusive rights to the Olympics to 2032. And sort of segueing into what we will remember 2019 for, it seems that one of the big things is that we've gone from the era of peak or plentiful TV into the mega programming era, where we now have Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, BET Plus, and coming up next year, Peacock, which is the ad-supported or the first ever ad-supported mega programming, and HBO Max. Peacock coming in April and HBO Max coming in May, and Comcast next month is going to be an investor meeting here in New York to showcase Peacock.
You know what? It's getting so crowded right now. You know, this is reminiscent. I'll tell you what this reminds me of in some degree. way back when cable started to really, you know, come in and make an impact, and then suddenly there was basically every week there was an announcement of another new cable network, and it was just getting out of hand. And a lot of people back then were predicting that the broadcast networks were going to become obsolete, which never happened. So I'll address that by immediately saying the broadcast networks are not evaporating anytime soon. That's not happening. But I think what's going to happen in this world of all these digital streamers is, you know, look, if you want Disney Plus, which is an enormous success, by the way, enormous. If you want Disney Plus, you have to pay a certain amount every year. If you want Netflix, you have to pay this. If you want upcoming HBO Max, this is going to start adding up. You know, people at home are going to start ordering things, and then suddenly they're going to have, you know, a rise in cost. That's going to be detrimental. So I think it's getting to the point where enough is enough. And, yeah, HBO Max is coming up and Peacock is coming up and whatever else. But I think at some point we have to max out. You know, there's just so many shows people can watch. And right now we're going to end the year with well over 500 original scripted series. And these streamers coming in, you know, like Apple Plus, had a whole menu of original scripted product that they had on. One of their shows, The Morning Show, got a lot of attention. You know, the critics have noticed it. But I think we're getting to a point where we're maxing out on this. It's got to max out eventually. Because, again, what's going to start happening is people are not going to want to, are not going to order all these different things. I mean, what is HBO Max going to bring to the table that we don't already have? What is Peacock going to bring to the table? How much content can we consume? So that's becoming a concern.
Is that what you remember 2019 for, that we are in this era of mega programming and the concern about how A, max out happens and when, and B, the impact on the broadcast networks, the cable networks, the multicast channels, and so on?
Oh, without a doubt, this is what I'll remember. This is what I think we'll remember this year for. I mean, what basically happened was, look, the big three until Disney Plus came was, you know, Netflix, of course, Hulu, and Amazon. And then, of course, there are all these other streamers that are out there, you know, coming up with original shows and whatever else, you know, to grab, you know, the available eyeballs. But I think what happened was Disney Plus was such a rousing success so quickly that it showed everyone else out there that there is still room for a big, splashy success in the streaming world. So I think it's going to just keep continuing and continuing. But I think, if anything, that's what we're going to remember this for. We're going to remember this year another year of record number of original scripted shows. All these new streamers that are popping up, you know, Disney Plus just started, and Apple Plus, you know, Apple TV Plus, and whoever else. And, you know, you still have the broadcast networks. But, Simon, I think what everybody has to remember is you still will get more eyeballs on a broadcast network. For example, if you put the Super Bowl on a streamer, you're not going to get 100 million people to watch. It's not going to happen. And I think the question mark that, you know, that remains very uncertain is who exactly are watching the streamers? How, you know, how many people? What are the demos? We don't know. We're speculating. A lot of it is based on speculation. But I think what Disney Plus showed was, because it got so many subscribers so quickly, they did a really good job of offering a product, offering a service that people would want to have content-wise. But again, at some point, we have to max out on this. You know, we can't be having this conversation in 5 years if there's another 10 streamers. There's just, you know, there's just so many you could have at the same time. But, you know, it's been a decent year, and, you know, the broadcast networks still have an audience. They haven't, you know, they're down. It, you know, every year they lose more steam, but they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yep. Two things that I will remember a lot about this year, Mark. First is the American public, more than ever before, embracing smart TV sets and smart TV devices. They continue to be bestsellers during the holiday season all year round, whether it's Black Friday, Cyber Monday, the holidays, et cetera. And we're seeing more and more original programming services use these smart
right.
sets and devices to either be
right.
distributed to consumers as their main way to go or their exclusive way to go, whether it's Spirits Network or whether it's the Fantasy Network or Dust from Gunpowder and Sky or the Lego Channel, which was just put together last week. We're going to have the developer on that put the Lego Channel on the air on our show Friday. The other thing tying in with that is to see what the capabilities and the capacities of these products are. And it seems that with the installment of artificial intelligence, voice services by Google Assistant, Siri, and Alexa, where you can use the set with your voice, it seems that that may be the trigger that is finally launching this era of interactive television, i.e. the Netflix success with Bandersnatch that won 2 Emmy Awards, Best Interactive Show Made for TV Movie, Food Network Kitchen coming on, and more recently Portal TV, the interesting service from Facebook that has the big Muppet campaign all over the place on television.
Right. I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. I mean, this business of consumption is changing so rapidly. There's so many things happening and there's so many new technology and new content and all that. That's absolutely where this business could be going, without a doubt. Everything you said, I completely agree with, without a doubt.
By the way, we have somebody just entered our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Thanks for coming aboard. You have a question or comment from Mark Berman, the Programming Insider. Put it in the room. Make the call, 646-652-2906. And before we go anywhere else, you have a new role now. In addition to your wonderful website and email service, you have a new role with an organization that is responsible for broadcasting cable and multi-channel news called Next TV. Tell us about that and what you'll be doing with them.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'm a contributing writer for Next TV. This is from, as you said, multi-channel news and broadcasting and cable. And I recently filed 5 different stories for them, trends that are happening in the digital world. It's all digital themed. And I attended a conference last week, TV of Tomorrow, which I posted a story for them. So I'm going to be doing some writing for them. And on the flip side, on the other side of the spectrum, I write a weekly column now for a website called Considerable that's targeted to an audience between the age of 50 and 70. And what I do for them is I write about TV nostalgia. I'm just about to file a story on 20 of your favorite cartoons from yesteryear. So I just did a piece on the best Christmas-themed episodes in the history of television. So, yeah, so for next TV, I'm writing about digital. For Considerable, I write about nostalgia. And I also blog for Forbes.com. And one of the pieces that I wrote, or actually I wrote it yesterday, was the whole Hallmark scandal. I did that for Forbes. So I'm doing writing for a number of different places. But thank you for asking.
You're welcome. I saw your story on the top 10 Twilight Zone episodes, and I thought you really got it great. And I'm happy that Eye of the Beholder, which I think is one of the best half hours of television ever made, which is now almost 60 years old. You still see it, and it's still fresh and wonderful and holds up beautifully, and it still packs a punch.
Which show? I didn't hear what you said. Which show?
You're listening to the Twilight Zone episodes, top 10
including
Eye of the
Beholder. Oh, the Twilight Zone, I know. I did actually, with the best Christmas episodes, I had to have the Art Carney episode of The Twilight Zone, but I recently did a feature highlighting the 10 best episodes of The Twilight Zone, which was really hard to do because I don't think there's a bad episode of The Twilight Zone, and there was like 160 of them. So that show still holds up all these years later, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. And I'm happy you mentioned Night of the Meek, the Christmas episode with Art Carney. It's one of my favorite Christmas episodes of any series. And I'm happy that in recent years, Sci-Fi has brought back the original videotape. It was originally a videotape episode, one of the 6 that they did back in 1960-61. And it's been one of the best of the bunch. And Art Carney's performance and some great old character acts like Burt Mustin and John Vernon are just absolutely wonderful. As it was said, The Twilight Zone Companion by Mark Strauss will be the best Twilight Zone episode for kids. And I understand it was a personal favorite of Rod Serling. And Ethel Winant, the famous casting director, thought that with Art Carney and the way he handled the children and so forth, it was like a magical – it was taped only a few weeks before Christmas also. So it had that very special holiday flavor. More interactivity. What do you think about interactive television? Do you think we are now in that era? And what kind of impact is it going to have going forward in 2020 and beyond?
You know, I think the experience of watching television is so different now. I mean, I remember the days of television where you'd watch a show and you'd go into the office the next morning and you'd talk about it around the proverbial water cooler. That's what people did. If you saw something, I remember one show that always got a lot of water cooler buzz was St. Elsewhere. That was in the 1980s. It aired on Wednesday. It was a medical drama. And on Thursday, we would all talk about it. Now, when you watch a TV show, you could tweet, you could go on Facebook, you could go on Instagram, you could go on all the social media platforms and have an available audience to you while you're watching. You know, for me personally, you know, I've done that in the past and I'll do that in the future, and that, you know, it's becoming an interactive experience. I also think in some ways it takes away from the viewer experience, because instead of really focusing on the show itself, you're kind of focusing on I'm out there tweeting and communicating in social media. So I think that's, you know, that's where the business is going. I mean, it's no longer just about sitting at home and watching a show. And also remember, because of digital right now, you could watch a show anytime you want. You could binge watch a season. You could do it at any time. You could create your own schedule. So it's not like the old days where a certain show was on a certain hour and a certain night and we'd all come and talk about it the next day. It's sort of like people watch shows at their leisure whenever they want. And it's become a different experience. The whole experience of content consumption has become different. In some ways, I think it's better. In some ways, I think it's worse. You know, I mean, to me, I think the experience of watching television is still watching it on television when it's on. There's just something about watching, like, one of my favorite shows is Survivor. I've seen every episode for 20 years. There's something about watching it live when it's actually on, as opposed to, you know, watching it at my leisure. But, you know, the streamers have changed the rules, and it's a very different environment right now.
Let's trade some thoughts about the best of the year. Give me your picks for best new series, best series, comedy or drama, and sleeper program, sleeper show.
That's a very good. I think the best show of the year to me, my personal favorite is Stranger Things. I didn't watch it initially. I kept hearing about it, and I was like, I really want to sit down and watch this. And I sat and watched the first season. You know, on a streamer, you don't get as many episodes. So to sit through a season, you could do it in one or two sittings. So I watched Stranger Things, loved the first season, loved the second season. And then this past season, season three, personally, I think, was the best season I've seen. I think that was by far the best season of that show. And it just, you know, and it, you know, there's just something about a show like that. And I think one of the best new shows right now, and this is an interesting thing, Simon, there's a show on CBS called Evil. It airs Thursday at 10 o'clock. It's from the people who did The Good Fight and The Good Wife. If that was a show on Netflix or any of the streamers, that would be, oh my God, it would be on everyone's best list. Everybody would be talking about it on social media, but it's on CBS. When you think of a show like CBS, when you think of a show on a network like CBS, you think of an NCIS, you think of, you know, a traditional crime solver. So it doesn't get the kind of attention that it would have gotten on a streamer. But I think that show, and you, by the traditional ratings, it's not a hit by any means, but I think it's a show that's worth seeing. CBS already renewed it for next year, and I think it's a show that deserves a lot of attention. I would also call it a sleeper success because, you know, the broadcast networks this fall, I believe they had 20 new shows. Nothing really broke out in terms of the traditional ratings. Nothing really was really all that exciting. I think one show that's been getting a ton of a truckload of accolades is Fleabag on Amazon Prime, which is a really, really super good show. And then here's a show I want to mention that nobody will ever put it on their best list, but I'm going to mention it because I think it's just plain funny. The Neighborhood on CBS. I think it's an excellent show. It's in its second season. It's with Cedric the Entertainer. It's just a very funny show. I like to kind of sit back, watch it. It's not brain surgery. No one will ever say it's a best of anything, but I just think it's a very fun show to watch. So there's a lot of things that, you know, I think there's a lot of good shows. You know, this was a good year of television, but it's too much television, just too much of it.
Yeah. I agree. This was an amazing year, I think, in terms of show quality and stuff. And my picks, first for Best New Series, David Makes Man on the Oprah Winfrey Network. A wonderfully evocative, extraordinary, amazing series with a sensational cast, showing a boy dealing with growing up in the projects and having to pick between a life as a drug dealer and a life as an honor student and what it could bring to him and his family. The casting is marvelous, put together by Carol Allen McCready, the Oscar-winning co-writer of Moonlight in his first television series. The talent in front of behind the camera, I thought, was absolutely extraordinary. The person who plays David was magnificent. The person who plays his mother, even more magnificent. And wonderful supporting performance by Felicia Rashad and Ruben San Diego Hudson. I hope I was with Tina Perry a week or so ago at Discovery's holiday party here in New York. I'm pulling for his own to give it a second season. I really think it's dynamite. My pick for best show, best series of the year, the final season of Mr. Robot that's currently playing Sunday nights on USA Network. Sam Esmail is bringing it home as writer and director. It will go down, I think, as one of the most extraordinary series of this decade. Todd Campbell should get an Emmy winning next year for his cinematography. Matt Quayle, who we've had on the program, who won the Emmy several years ago for the music for the show, delivers a great score. And everyone involved, from Robbie Malek on down, just delivers the goods. Every episode is something different about it, including the one last night. The finale is next Sunday night in USA. See it, see it, see it. It's just really extraordinary. And my pick for sleeper of the year, I think you're going to love this, Mark, because you're very big in syndication. And I've only seen the show for a couple of weeks, and I am falling in love with it. It's one of the new series this year in syndication, Personal Injury Court. It's starting to rev up among the courtroom shows. It is very interesting. It deals with personal injury, the only one that does it. What's at stake is hundreds of thousands of dollars. But what makes this program very special is the judge. The judge is marvelous. He really explains the law and the legal and what he gets his decisions on. He is a marvelous explainer of the law. I think he's as good as Judge Judy or anybody else. And I think this show is on its way to becoming a breakout hit, just like Frank Caprio was a year ago with Court in Providence. And I would even recommend Personal Injury Court and Court in Providence for Peabody Awards next year, Mark. I just think this show is terrific. Orion Television distributes it. Here in New York, it's on WNY at 5 and 5:30. If you haven't caught this program, do. It's my pick for Sleeper of the Year.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I actually watch Court in Providence. I watched Court in Providence just last week. I watched an episode. What I like about the show is he's funny. I mean, it's a funny show. I mean, he has a lot of humor in it. Yeah, but, you know, what's interesting because syndication in this changing world, syndication in some ways is in a bubble. And, you know, it chugs along year after year. I mean, you have shows that last in syndication for decades on end. I mean, Judge Judy at this point could do the show forever. I mean, she can't because she's probably pushing 80 at this point, but shows could last forever. That's kind of in a bubble, but that's a very good sleeper pick. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah. I know just started Personal Injury Court like the last two or three weeks, both watching on YouTube and also watching it on Channel 55 or Channel 10, depending on where you get it in the New York area. And again, I think the judge makes this program. He is just so good at explaining what he does. And I love his line, "Let's get into the legal sauce." It will become a new tagline, I think, for courtroom shows. So here we are coming up on a new year and a decade. In terms of 2020, is there a show or two or a trend you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward, you know, I think the trend that we've seen, there's so many dramas out there. There's so much, you know, in the drama department. I'd kind of like to see more comedies. I mean, one drama I'm looking forward to, there's a show on CBS coming up called Tommy. It's a crime drama with Edie Falco. Anything Edie Falco does has to be good because of the caliber of her work. So I'm curious about that. And, you know, there's a new Star Trek series coming up, Picard, you know, based on that character. I would like, but again, I'd like to see, you know, more comedies. You don't see as much. You know, now that The Big Bang Theory is over, Young Sheldon hasn't really, you know, doesn't hold a candle to The Big Bang Theory on CBS. And I'd like to kind of see, you know, more comedies. That's, you know, The Kominsky Method on and Netflix is an excellent show. So is Grace and Frankie. You know, the streamers, you know, they have some comedies, but there's so much more of a focus on drama. I'd like to see more comedy coming up. I mean, as it stands, it's going to be all about drama. But you know what, a show, you know, talk about a show that nobody ever talks about. I'm so excited to have it come back because it's one of my favorites. I like Undercover Boss on CBS. They didn't run it last year. They use it in between seasons of Survivor, editions of Survivor. I just enjoy it. I mean, it makes me feel good to watch it, and I kind of watch that and think, why don't I have a boss like that? I never had one.
Yeah.
You know? But I like, you know, I like stuff that are inspiring and make you feel good, and I think that's important.
I like Undercover Boss, so I'm happy it's coming back. We had a number of years ago, Eli Holtzman, the creator of the show, with his production company, and it's given great exposure to a lot of restaurant chains, other chains, and different lines of work, and it really shows you, I think, how great employees can be on the job, and I'm happy it's coming back. Two or three shows I'm looking forward to, and I think you'll like this one. It's a comedy pick. It's the new Comedy Central series from Awkwafina, the wonderful talent who really has broken loose in all sorts of ways this year. It's on Comedy Central. It's called Nola from Queens, and I hear it's really terrific. And I think Awkwafina is going to be one of the big stars of this decade to come. She is really talented as a rapper, as a comedian, and as an actress. And I think she is going to be very big in television and film the years to come. And another show I'm looking forward to is Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which will get a special screening in January on NBC and then go on as a regular series in February. I've heard good things about it. It's a musical dramedy, which is the star has thoughts about life developed as musical songs. And with some of the talent behind this show, I understand it really could be good. So I'm looking forward to that one as well. As far as the next Sam S. Mail series on USA premiering in February, Briar Patch, starring Rosario Dawson, the early promos for that show look really good. And I'm also looking forward down the stretch to see how Sam S. Mail does Battlestar Galactica on Peacock. I think he's the person that can maybe make that happen.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, look at it this way. There's a lot of stuff coming up. There's no shortage of original content. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, if anything, the next year in television will probably be another year of record content, number of shows. It's just, there's no end in sight.
Yeah. And one more before we go. Little America, which premieres January 17th on Apple TV. It's the anthology series about immigrants from around the country and how they are making the American dream happen or not. And it's already been renewed for a second season. I think I would love to see the anthology series come back in its regular form as a weekly series with new stars, new talent in front and behind the camera every week. It's nice to see that it started this year with The Twilight Zone coming back, and now we have Little America and a number of Modern Love did very well for Amazon. And
yes,
as a format, I'd love to see the anthology drama come back.
There's plenty of that. And then I think another trend next year that's going to definitely remain is we're going to keep seeing revivals. I mean, there's no shortage of it. I mean, right now, you know, I've seen, you know, I wasn't really sure why anyone would want to, you know, Mad About You. Why is that one being redone? But it's interesting to watch. It's not a bad show. And I think revivals are going to remain very much on the docket next year.
If you want more observations from our guest, here's where you go, ProgrammingInsider.com. Can't go wrong. He has them every day on that site and also in his email, which I am a subscriber to regularly. Pick it up. And check out his new work at Next TV. The website is www.nexttv.com. Check out his other work as well. I promise you will be thoroughly entertained. He's one of the best observers of TV in this business. Mark, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Let's do this more soon and not wait to the end of 2020 to do it. It's a delight.
Definitely.
Best of the year, the decade ahead to you and your family and everybody involved. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. You too. Happy holidays.
You too, Mark. Take care. All the greatest.
Take care. Take care.
Mark Berman for the Programming Insider, Next TV, joining me here in New York. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We're going for our third weekly winner in a row. And this time out, the winner will get the wonderful book, Identify Yourself, A Journey in Creative Courage by Stuart Shapiro, the man that created Nightflight way back when in the 80s for USA Network, and now has his own Nightflight channel on smart TV sets and smart devices. He was a guest on our program earlier this year. One of the great character actors in television history was Harry Morgan. Probably no one actor co-starred in as many series as Harry Morgan did. Of course, you may remember him as Sherman T. Potter, the Colonel on MASH. He won the Emmy Award for that role. And also, he was Officer Bill Gannon on the first revival of Dragnet with Jack Webb back in the late 1960s, early 1970s. Well, here's our question. December Bride, back in the late 1950s, was Harry Morgan's first series as a co-star. What was his last? His last was in the late 1980s. And I'll give you a hint, given that this is the holiday season. The series was adapted from a classic Broadway play and movie. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win Identify Yourself by previous guest Stuart Shapiro. And by the way, also, I believe, autograph as well. So nice addition for you. And if you list the question, we'll try to play it one more time before we leave you before the bottom of the hour. If not, we'll post it first thing tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. But remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. When we come back, we're shifting gears to BYU TV's new holiday movie, Christmas Jars. It will have a special screening this Christmas Eve. We will have the duo behind the film's executive producers, Jonas and Jesse Purpose, will be with us. But first, we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You'll see the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com. More than 35 million listeners around the world together and growing. BYU, BTR, and Speaker are your home for Voices of Women with Chris Sternis. Check it out, Voices of Women, this Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, Voices of Women. You'll hear it right here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Remember, best BTR available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow We Call Live on this Monday afternoon, December 2019. Well, those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, Simon Apple with you live from New York, 35 degrees at the top of the hour, and we're happy that wherever you are, you're tuning us in to the program All About Television. More great guests coming your way this half hour, and we invite you once again to be part of the program, so ring it in, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, or catch us across the country, or around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Should I use the phone? No problem. We got a chat room. It's busy. We have a person already in it. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And again, you can connect us by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. In the last few years, BYU TV, the only national television network that is programmed by a college university, Brigham Young in this case, has been doing a holiday dramatic special or made-for-TV movie. The latest, the made-for-TV movie, that is called Christmas Jars. It premiered earlier this month and will be a special screening at 8 p.m. on Christmas Eve. It is based on a best-selling novel, and it's a novel that actually inspired a national movement. Joining us live is the executive producers of the film, Jonas and Jesse Purpose. Jonas and Jesse, happy holiday season to both of you.
Happy holidays. It's nice to speak to you. Thank you for having us on your show.
Yeah, thank you.
Here's
happy holidays.
Where are you both calling from?
Calling from snowy Montreal right now, in your northern neighbors up in Canada.
Ah, one of my favorite cities. We had some of your city folks here with us here in New York for a special event I'm involved with at Landmark Worldwide, the personal training development organization behind the Landmark Forum, one of the courses. It was a pleasure to have them there. And, Jonas, we'll start with you. How long have the Christmas Jars been in the offering for?
Well, I was lucky enough. I came in about a year and a half ago. It was first – Jesse's been involved for, I think, over 2 to 3 years. Jesse, how long?
We've been developing the show for a couple years. It was the wonderful folk at BYU who had brought the book to our attention with the idea that we should develop it together. And I have to say, when I first read Christmas Jars, I was flying on an airplane, and the book made me cry somewhere at about 35,000 feet, bawling my eyes out.
Yeah.
And Jesse, this is based on a book by Jason Wright, a novel. And it's a very interesting situation because usually novels don't inspire movements. True life accounts inspire movements. What do you think about this novel and its main character, Hope Jensen, reporter, and the premise of the book really made people look at this idea of offering Christmas jars?
Well, I think people are motivated or are touched by stories. Let me put it that way. People are touched by stories of selfless giving. And in this case, there was a beautiful emotional story about a young girl named Hope, who's, I don't want to give too many spoilers from the movie, but who finds herself in very difficult circumstances early on in the movie. And thanks to the generosity, the selfless generosity of the family, she's able to find herself back up on her feet. And then it becomes a mystery. She's out to discover who was so generous to her and helped her out when she was at one of her worst points in her life. And this beautiful mystery is revealed.
Jonas, when BIU gave both of you the book, did they give you any ideas about how to adapt it into a movie?
It was a lot. I mean, they gave us notes. The world was our oyster at first, and then we came up with a script, and it morphed a lot. So we had something about in October of 2018, and then we got much more involved. They seemed to really like the script, but there were a lot of the ones that made add a lot more levity to the script was what we were dealing with, to make it more comedic, and.
But the core of the story, I would say, was there from the beginning. The book, gave us a great roadmap for how to adapt the story early on. It was what was not included in the book was a romantic storyline that we had to build in. That storyline is actually in the sequel of Christmas Jars, the second book, but we brought it into the first story because we thought it was so compelling. And we needed a bit of a light romance, I would say, in this story. But as Jonas was saying, the great addition that BYU brought to the story, because our company has produced a lot of films for another network that I will not name, but we do a lot of Christmas movies, and they do a lot of Christmas movies. And what was so great about working with BYU is that there was this great desire for comedy and levity, as Jonas was saying, and they really pointed us in the direction. And when they started saying, yeah, make it funnier, make it cuter, give us some physical comedy, we were all about that, and it was fun to deliver all of that. It was really,
we were chomping at the bit for that. We loved being behind the monitors and make it funny. And sky was the limit for it. So it was a lot of fun adding the humor into the scripts and to the movie.
Yeah.
I think you both perked up Mark Berman's ears. He was talking the last night, in fact, he wished there was more comedy on television in all sorts of different ways. So I think you perked his ears up a little bit to see this program. By the way, another person just joined our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Come on into the room. If you have a question or comment for our guest, put it there or make the call, 646-652-2906. Since both of you have been involved in creating holiday movies, what do you think is the key to coming up with holiday films year after year that make it with the audience? And also, how did you use that experience to do this one?
Sure. Well, I always say that the most important thing is a character that you're going to be able to relate to, that you're going to be able to go on a journey with, that you're going to root for, and that will ultimately be, hopefully, if it's a Christmas movie, we'd almost guarantee that there will be a happy, fun ending at the end. In this case, there was a great character with Hope. You meet her at the beginning in the book and in our film, and she's gone through some tough times, as I said. But you really, really root for her journey as she not only discovers the miracle and the mystery of the Christmas jars, but finds fulfillment and satisfaction along the way and advances with her life. And you really, she comes out a winner at the end. And so you're really happy for Hope through this journey.
The program is Christmas Jars. It's the latest original dramatic special during this holiday season from BYU TV, that's Brigham Young University's national cable and satellite television network. And it's already premiered, and it will have a special screening this Christmas Eve. That's next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time. We've got the two executive producers behind the program, Jonas and Jesse Prokop. They're live with us from Montreal, Canada, this half hour. On tomorrow, will be televised. Tom Rabbi will be live from New York, 35 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guest, make the call and make it happen, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. There's a big two-hour episode coming your way on Friday. A lot of it will be dealing with TV's future in one way or another. We'll have the chief executive officer of Hovercast. It's an organization trying to make interactive TV happen all over the place. Eli Stonberg will be with us as our lead guest. And then we will highlight Apple TV's first ever Apple TV app of the year. It was given out earlier this month here in New York, and we will talk to the developer of that app. It's called The Explorers. Live from Europe is Jean-Francois Grand. Then we will have the Chief Executive Officer of Future Today. It's a company out to create channels that are available either mainly or exclusively on your smart TV set or smart TV device. Vikrant Mehta will be with us. His latest project, it launched last week, the Lego Channel. No kidding. The Lego Channel. And finally, well, the executive producer of Fox's new series, Pretty Dancing, with Jenna Dewan as host and executive producer. Mike Yurchek will be with us. That's a special two-hour edition of our show, pre-Christmas, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, this Friday on Tomorrow will be televised. Jonas, how long have you and Jesse been working together on TV projects?
Well, as you can tell by our last name, we're brothers, so lucky for us, we've been uses a family-run business for almost 20 years right now. So it's kind of in our blood, but on this specific project, it's been a labor of love for over a year and a half to 2 years. And we actually grew a lot closer in making this project together, and we love working together, and we relish the opportunity to do it again.
We were roommates again for a brief moment when we were up in Ottawa shooting together, yelling at each other to stop snoring.
Was it very easy? Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was saying, you shot the film in Ottawa. Was it very easy to find locations there that sort of gave you a great picture of the atmosphere of Christmas Jaws?
Yeah, well, one thing we should know is that we set the project actually in Columbus, Ohio, and we had chosen that city because of its Midwest location and because it has some similarities to Ottawa in terms of it has a river running through it, Ottawa has a river and a canal running through it, and that geographically they're both kind of mid-sized cities that also have a winter climate. There's snow in Columbus, as far as we know. There's certainly tons of snow up in Ottawa when we were shooting. One of the locations we're most excited about is the outdoor skating rink that we found, where we spent the day freezing ourselves to pieces, but had a wonderful filming experience there. What other locations, Jonas? Do you want to talk about the bowling alley? That was kind of fun.
we were excited to... have a bowling, like one of the scenes called for a bowling alley, and we were super excited to get dressed up and make an ode to some old TV movies. My brother and I were dressed in the background, if anybody sees that, in the famous bowling alley scene. So that was a lot of fun doing that together.
Yeah, it was our cameo. We can name it. It was our cameo to the Big Lebowski. So we got to pretend to be Big Lebowski characters in the background of a shot. You got to pay real close attention to the film.
And what was good about the ice rink was the coldest day I've ever experienced in my life before. So keep that in mind when you see it. But at least we got it outdoors instead of indoors.
Talk about the cast, who you had portray Hope and who you had portray some of the other key characters that she deals with.
Sure. Well, Jonas, you were in charge of casting so much, so, I mean,
Jenny Ross is our wonderful lead, Hope. That was a open casting process, but we went through dozens and dozens and dozens of auditions, and it took a while to find someone, but she really read right off the page. It was exactly who we and our partners at BYU envisioned as that character. Had some fun with her, and she played the serious roles very, very well, and we were very happy with her. One of my other favorite characters was the boss, who's Lyle Butler. His name's Doug Murray, and Jesse and I worked with him in a previous project about 8 years ago, when we read this role, and we really wanted to make that very comedic and serious, but comedic as well. He was so funny with his physical humor and some of the lines that he threw. It's some of the best comedies in the early scenes of the movie with Doug Murray. And Markian, Jesse, you worked with Markian before. He was...
he's been in a series of ours called The Murders, which was a bit of a darker police show. But we loved his performance, and he was our co-lead, the romantic interest in this film. Very likable, warm, cute guy. You know, hard to not fall in love with him, in our view. We could talk also about the whole Maxwell family, if that's that's helpful. We had a very large family that Hope gets to meet in the film, and they were one of the actresses was named Tara Yelland, who played Hannah Maxwell, one of the sisters, or Markian's sister, if you will. We cast a woman named Zara Leverman to play Lauren Maxwell, the matriarch of the family. And Ron Lee, who is a pretty notable actor up here in Canada, has done some very, very big roles, played Adam Maxwell. He was the family patriarch. There's some very dramatic stuff that happens with him in the film. But if you look at his credits, he's got, you know, tremendous amount of really big shows, and we're excited to have him. He'd been on shows like The Good Witch and Orphan Black and Shoot the Messenger, and he just he's just such a great actor. We're so excited to have him.
And an even nicer person behind the screen.
What do both of you think about this environment in this era of plentiful television for Christmas movies? It seems that so many more networks are doing them than before. Hallmark, Freeform, ABC is now back in business. You have Bounce TV is doing their first originals this year, ION Television. It seems there's more and more players in this marketplace. So I was wondering, how does it impact your efforts in doing holiday movies, especially in terms of trying to distinguish what you do from what other people are doing, whether it's in the locations you use or the thematic material or the kind of actors that you have?
Sure. Well, I think that every network is striving to create its own type of template, its own type of brand for what a Christmas movie for that network should be. So in the case of BYU, we certainly felt that there was a strong desire to make this a family experience, and one that centered on the family, that had actors and characters that were in their teenage years or their early youth, the early young adults. That is, for us, was a very big distinction. The fact they were looking for more comedy, too, seemed to distinguish them from other networks that we've worked for. You know, we're, as producers, and we produce quite a bit of content, including for some of the other networks that you named, for Hallmark, for Freeform, and even for Netflix. You know, this has been a really exciting time for us as television movie producers. There's been a lot of production orders, but there's clearly a reason why these films are working. And we think that, you know, in a time when there is so much depressing news on television sometimes. You're always feeling like you're getting where there's a lot of dark shows that are out there as well. We felt that there's a strong desire and need in the marketplace for feel good stories that are easy to digest, that don't require an advanced degree in physics to work the plot out for, that have wonderful characters and that make you feel like you want to watch this film with a family, you know, family member. And so that's been super, super exciting times for the business. And then the key for us is to try to figure out what each one of these brands or networks is really looking for and how to distinguish that film from the other ones that we make.
Christmas Jars is BYU TV's special holiday made-for-TV movie this year, and it has already premiered earlier this month, but it's getting a special semi-premiere, I might say, or second run, big second run, Christmas Eve, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. That's a week from tomorrow. And we've got the executive producers behind this film and many, many more. Justin Jesse Purpus joining us live from Montreal, Canada, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you have a question or comment for them in our remaining minutes, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Remember, you can hear all of our episodes this year so far and previous years, too, at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and on podcast at iTunes, Apple TV, the Speakers Podcast app, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at www.iHeartRadio.com. You go to that site, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you're in. By the way, since the film has been in production or the screening early this month, have you heard from either BYU or from other states about adopting the Christmas Jars campaign in some way?
We haven't, but we are aware of the campaign, and we think it's beautiful. It's a beautiful idea. I mean, one that Jason Wright, or the author of the book, has really emphasized as part of why he was so motivated to get a film made. We think that if it's a beautiful way to inspire people, and if our film inspires people to give selflessly, then that is the best kind of thing that can happen from a film. Yes, we want to entertain people. Yes, we want to make them love our characters. But if it actually inspires someone to do something good, then even better. That's the best kind of credibility.
Yeah, and I love looking at Jason's Instagram handle and seeing, and he shares all the movement of people doing the same thing, and that's, you know, it's great to see it at this time, especially at this time of year, to see the charitableness of what this movement has done.
I was about to get to that. Great segue, Jason and Jesse. What do you want to do next year in 2020? You continue to make movies? You want to branch out a TV series, especially given all the new opportunities with smart TV programming networks, as well as Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, CBS All Access, and, of course, new services like Apple TV Plus, BET Plus, Disney Plus, and of course, coming up next year, Peacock and HBO Max, and who knows about topics, and who knows who else.
Sure. Yeah. So we certainly have a few Christmas movies that we've slated for production already for next year. We're fingers crossed on something going as soon as January. It's called Delivered by Christmas, and I'm hopefully it will be delivered by Christmas. At least the green light for it this year. We have some books that we'd love to develop with BYU that we've spoken to them about. We're feeling pretty robust about the future of television movies at the very least. I think there's going to be a lot more in the future, and now it's about finding the right books and material on the development side to get in the hands of great screenwriters and great directors. And try to put some magic together when it comes to making these films.
Do you want to do original series or do dramatic specials or comedy specials and sort of branch out what you do?
A little bit. We do have a dramatic series that has been airing in Canada called Coroner that we're very excited about. It's going to go. It's the second season begins in January. It's a police show about a female coroner, and we have a few other projects that I can speak to that are in, though I can't speak specifically to, but they are set up at streamers like Apple, at streamers like HBO Max, at Netflix, some of them in the kids space, some in the more adult drama space. But that's, for producers, producing a series is the big leagues, if you will. And if we can get there in more success, then we'd be delighted.
The name of the company incidentally is called Muse Entertainment, and the name of the program that they are doing for BYU TV right now is Christmas Jars. If you missed the premiere early this month, you get another chance to see it in prime time 1 week from tomorrow, Christmas Eve, 8 p.m. Eastern at Pacific Time on BYU TV. Check your local listings for where that channel is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.byutv.org. That's www.byutv.org. And again, that's Christmas Jars, Christmas Eve, week from tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern time on BYU TV, programmed by Brigham Young University. George and Jesse Purvis, the executive producer of the film, and much, much more to their company, Muse Entertainment. Thank you again for joining us. A very happy holiday season and a great year and decade ahead for your company. And I look forward to having you back next year with more programming to talk about.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you. Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You got it, Joseph and Jesse.
You.
Take care. All the greatest.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joseph Jesse Purpose joining us live from Montreal, Canada. We have a little bit of time left, so once again, we're going to give you the classic trivia question of the week. We're going for our third weekly winner in a row. Winner gets Identify Yourself, the wonderful book published earlier this year by Stuart Shapiro of Night Flight fame on USA, and now the Night Flight channel available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Harry Morgan, first original series as co-star back in the 1950s was December Bride. What was his last original series as a co-star? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you missed the question just now, we will post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter at UBCSimonTWDT. Our next episode is this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Big two-hour episode to wrap the week up. We'll have Hovercast with Chief Executive Officer Eli Stoltenberg, who was at the TV Up Tomorrow show earlier this month here in New York, the developer of the Apple TV App of the Year Award, the Explorers, Jean-Francois Grenet, joining us live from Europe. From Future Today, the folks behind the LEGO Channel and other smart TV programming services, Chief Executive Officer Victor Russo, and from the new Fox series, Pretty Dancing with Jan Tawan, Executive Producer Mike Yurchek. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Again, I want to thank all of our guests for being here these last 90 minutes and all of you for tuning in. Remember, if you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise, www.blogtalkradio.com/televise. Don't forget to check out the podcast version, available 24/7 at iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker podcast app, and the iHeartRadio podcast network at iHeartRadio.com. If you go to that website, put Tomorrow We Televise in the search bar, click, and you are in. Remember, we always love hearing from you. What do you think about today's guest? What's your thoughts about what made 2019 great for you in television, or not so great? And what's your thoughts about where TV is going in 2020 and beyond? Love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and where you're from. That's how you get our class trivia question of the week. Plus, contribute to our regular feature or show to know. TV series you like, doesn't get enough attention, let us know. We'll give you the credit if we spotlight on future episodes of this program. That's blog. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, you also get to me on social media. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. Any which way you communicate, we communicate back, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not those of the Block Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate BTR is Candace Williams. Andy Toews, Block Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of BTR are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. So give yourself or someone you love the gift of sound. How? For a trial run, 3 audiobooks, 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/tellers. I promise you, it will make a great holiday gift that lasts a lifetime. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week. We're back on Friday, 2-hour edition for you, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Block Talk Radio, Speaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Remember, whatever you're up to today and the rest of the week, please make it safe and make it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.